Welcome to the Hypothalamic Amenorrhea Podcast. I'm Dani Sheriff, your host, certified fertility awareness practitioner, functional nutrition counselor, and founder of the HA Society, and of course, an HA recovery coach who has walked where you currently are walking. This is the place to come if you care about getting your period regularly. This podcast aims to educate, inform, and keep you motivated on your period and HA recovery track. So let's dive in. But last thing, nothing on the show should be taken as medical advice, so please seek the advice of your physician. Hey, are you trying to recover and maybe even fall pregnant naturally? I thought that might be you. And if so, we have created our best ever yet resource for you. Totally free. This is a masterclass. I've called it my masterclass because I have put everything into this, right? This masterclass is designed for you if you have HA or have had HA and are dealing with suboptimal cycles and you're serious about restoring those babies to full optimization and you want to create the ideal foundation for a pregnancy. This is going to be for you. So in this masterclass, I'm going to provide you a lot of things, including a lot of case studies, mine, Ashley's and Mishi's, as well as lots of our past clients and what their challenges were and what they had to do to overcome it. And we cover a really wide variety of types of cases of HA. So everything from primary amenorrhea and missing periods for years and years to short-term amenorrhea and what we did to handle that situation as well, and how long it took these people to go from HA to pregnant with this system, and how long it took them to go from HA to ovulating, of course, with this system. So lots of information, lots of case studies, lots of stats. We go through why this is not a weight gain plan and how we actually divide you into phases, the three phases of HA, and determine what your starting point is so that you have a good idea of where you need to start with your actual changes in lifestyle and nutrition changes. We even cover questions like HA and people with a normal BMI and recovery for people who have had HA for too long. There's so much in this 60-minute masterclass. Y'all, I'm impressed. And at the end, I'll also be running you through how to get a free HTMA, hair tissue mineral analysis through us, which is a part of our process for recovery and preconception clients that we're happily going to give you for free $99. As a massive thank you, of course, for joining the masterclass. So go to thehasociety.com/masterclass or head to our website and you'll find a link for it and find when the next available presentation is going to be. That's thehasociety.com/masterclass. Hey everyone, welcome back to the HA Podcast. It's me, Dani, and I'm here with Natalie Rose, who is an eating disorder therapist with her own company called Wake Up and Smell the Rosé. One of you guys actually begged me, shout out to Christina, to invite her onto the show because she was so helpful while she was going through, well, Natalie was so helpful while this listener was going through her own recovery journey. And she kind of just told me, like, Natalie, that your content and the things you had to say were inspiring and uplifting, and they helped her keep going when she was having hard times, you know, with her body image and having to eat when she didn't feel comfortable eating and all of these things. So, I mean, it just felt like then you're probably going to be helpful for every single person who listens to this show. So welcome to the show. It's so good to meet you.
Thank you. And that's such a beautiful introduction. I feel so grateful that, you know, even just one person has benefited from my content that way. I think as a content creator, it's always nice to hear stories like that, that, you know, that it has an impact. It kind of just makes you feel like there's meaning and purpose to it.
Yeah.
I mean, of course there is, but
Yeah, it's just sort of like it's someone is hearing it. Like, because you can get so caught up in the day to day of running it, right? Okay, what am I going to talk about? I'm making this content, blah, blah, blah. But you don't actually really get to experience the person receiving it very much.
Exactly.
So it's very if like you're just, one way.
Yeah, like you're just having a relationship with your phone and you're posting it, but it almost feels like who knows where it ends up, right?
Right. And then someone talks back. And like someone sends you a message or an email. And I love that. And just knowing, I guess, like Christina, for example, truly only she's one person who represents like 100 people who just didn't say anything, you know? And so like, when you think about it like that, you're like, wow. Yeah. Cause it does require effort for someone to put their hand up and say like, this person helped me, or send you an email just to say thank you. So I'm sure that for every one person who says something, there's like 100 people feeling the same way. I'm so pleased to have you on and get to know you. And I would love if you could just tell us a bit of your story and what brought you to becoming such a amazing, influential eating disorder therapist, because let's be real, not all of them are like amazing. So I'd love to hear your story.
Thank you. I think having lived experience does sort of help you be able to relate to your clients more. Like, you've been through it. I might not have the same story or experience as all of my clients, definitely not, because everyone's different. But I started feeling really self-conscious and like hating my body when I was really young. Like, even I feel like I was, you know, 6 or 7 years old, and comparing my body to my best friends. Like, I wish I had skinny legs like her, or I wish I had blonde hair. I wish I had blue eyes. I wish my name was Sabrina. Like, I just wanted to change everything about myself. Why? I don't know. I feel like it was even pre-bullying, you know, like I obviously had experienced like some challenges in relationships later. But at that point, I don't know, I feel like I was a pretty happy kid, maybe a little shy. So maybe there was something going on there where I was like, okay, I can feel I'm having trouble connecting and making friends as easily as other people, but I can't figure out why. So maybe it has something to do with my appearance. I feel like that might have been kind of a connection that was made really early on, unaware by myself at that time. Yeah. So yeah, always self-conscious. I was shy and very introspective and sensitive. And I probably started dieting and trying to change my body when I was maybe like 11, like sort of early teens. My body changed so quickly in 1 year in seventh grade, I think, when I was 11. Yeah, from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, I had gone up like 3 bra sizes or something. So my body was changing quickly and it felt out of control. I had acne, like it just didn't, I wasn't coping with that, with those changes well. So I started dieting. The real catalyst to me, you know, engaging in really unhealthy behaviors was I went to a new school for 10th grade. So that's the second year of high school. So switching high schools in between, like in the second year, not really knowing anyone there and feeling a lot of pressure to look a certain way to be able to fit in. So I just started engaging in like really restrictive eating. I lost a lot of weight really quickly, and it was quickly validated by the people around me. Like, I was known as the small one, the little one. And it became like part of my identity and something that I felt connected with me with people. So right then my brain is going, okay, weight loss is good. Like, keep doing this. This is the way to go. But for me, and not everyone has this experience, but it is quite a normal reaction, is I started binge eating to compensate for how much I was depriving myself of food. Mm-hmm. So it would go from like this restrict binge and then back to restriction. And I got caught in that cycle. And then as things in my life happened, like, you know, a breakup with my first love, divorce of my parents, like things like that, I was then using food as a way to cope with my emotions. Because binge eating is, yeah, your body is like, oh, I get all this food that I've been deprived of. And instantly your mood is uplifted because your body's getting what it needs. And it, you get this rush of dopamine. So I learned very quickly that I could eat to soothe my feelings, my my unpleasant feelings. So, so there was the restriction, and then there was also was using eating to cope. And then I continued that cycle to the end of high school. And then in university, I had some health issues come up where I had to stop exercising because my heart condition, which was something I was born with, was just coming to light because I was drinking copious amounts of alcohol in my first year of university and it was starting to take a toll. So the cardiologist was like, you have to stop drinking alcohol and you should really not exercise because you could have some kind of cardiac event. So exercise was something that I was using to manage my weight. So having that removed, I felt very uncontrolled in that sense. Dieting wasn't working the same anymore because it stops working over time, unless you continue to decrease, which I just wasn't able to do. And so the binge eating escalated in university. So I was isolating myself, gaining lots of weight, binge eating, and just very miserable for a couple of years. Towards my last year of university, I was doing something. I was like very involved in my graduate study program. I was doing a thesis and that required me to, well, I chose to do research in cognitive behavioral neuroscience. So I was like in the lab analyzing brains and like I had a responsibility to go in and manage this experiment. Like it gave me a lot of purpose. In hindsight, I think looking back, it gave me a lot of purpose and something to focus on that built my self-esteem. So naturally I saw myself binging less because I had something that was fulfilling me in a different way. And I was also kind of starting to reduce dieting. I was trying to eat more balanced meals. So that helped me reduce some of those symptoms and behaviors. But then my mom was diagnosed with cancer, which was like another huge event that was very emotional. And actually in her treatment, part of her treatment was she was doing some naturopathic treatment where she was told to eliminate, you know, all these certain foods and eat a very like raw plant-based diet. So I took that on with her as a way to support her, but also because part of my restrictive mindset was like, ooh, this gives you control over something. So I started dieting again in that sense. And then that just kind of threw me back into the restrict binge cycle again. And then I started going to, after my mom passed away, it was kind of like this. It opened the doors for me to learn how to process my emotions because I went to therapy and started actually like talking about my feelings rather than just shoving them down with restriction or food. And I learned what my emotions are for. I learned what coping mechanisms even meant, how I was coping before and how I could cope now. And so that helped me, even though that therapist didn't specialize in eating disorders, like didn't know anything about eating, just being able to build kind of a relationship with my emotions helped me move away from those symptoms. And I was also just starting to view exercise in a way that wasn't surrounded by weight loss. I was trying to maintain my health with just regular activity. Whereas before, when I was in that restrict binge cycle, I would only exercise when I was dieting. And then when I was binging, I wouldn't exercise because I was ashamed of my body. So I was starting to build a healthier relationship with exercise, which just helped kind of balance out my mood and my appetite and things like that. But then I sort of swung into an orthorexia type phase, like an obsession with healthy food and an obsession with exercise. It wasn't compulsive, but it was mostly, it was very, very disordered. Like I would be the one, you know, showing up to family events with my own pre-made, like cashew based quote unquote ice cream. And while they would be eating dessert, I'd be eating this like disgusting, like grainy mush. And not to say that, you know, that's always wrong. And if someone, you know, has an allergy to ice cream, you know, of course it's okay to honor your nutritional, your medical needs, but I had no allergies. I just believed all these things were bad and I was intolerant to certain foods. Mm-hmm. And it was really just because I was restricting and feeling a lot of stress around these foods. So what helped me break through that obsession with wellness and health was actually when sort of around when COVID hit. Before that, I was getting in touch with the anti-diet side of social media, where I was actually learning that a lot of the beliefs I had around food were actually myths. And that a lot of the things that you learn from wellness culture on social media are really just copied and pasted from other people's blogs. Like there's not a whole lot of science-backed research, like the actual nutritional science doesn't support a lot of those claims. And I was just learning about fatness and how body fat isn't the worst thing in the world, and that you can actually have a healthy amount of body fat. You can have body fat and still be healthy. So it's challenging my fat phobia, because a lot of my issues stemmed from being afraid of fat, thinking, you know, any kind of weight gain was bad. So that helped me. And then I just throughout COVID, I also, you know, my lifestyle totally changed, which wasn't my choice. And so I had to, I witnessed changes to my body that I couldn't really control. And I kind of had to learn how to cope with my emotions around that, because I wasn't willing to go back to disordered behaviors to lose weight at that point. I had decided that I really valued a lot of my food freedom, that I valued not just being able to share the same desserts everyone else is eating, but being able to eat what I want to eat at when I want to eat it. And that doesn't have to be a bad thing. Like that was such a beautiful thing. It felt so freeing. And I was starting to feel a lot of confidence in my relationship with food that I just wasn't willing to sacrifice it. So I coped with the weight gain. It was hard. It was emotionally challenging and nobody in my life understood it. But eventually that phase passed and I was able to cope with that and sort of develop a newer relationship with my body and with food. And through that time, I sort of missed out the part of when I started my blog. I started Wake Up and Smell the Rosé by posting my, daily breakfast bowls on Instagram as I was doing my master's degree to become a therapist. And that was still when I was in kind of my healthier phase, but I was writing about how I had stopped dieting and overcome binge eating. And I was still working on my relationship with food. I still had a lot more to learn at that point, but it attracted a lot of other people who also struggled with their relationship with food. And so as my following grew and I was starting to hear questions that I didn't know how to answer, I started doing more research. And then I was like, well, I'm becoming a therapist and I'm passionate about this stuff. Why don't I just merge the two and become a therapist who specializes in eating disorders? So I started taking specialized training in eating disorders, and that sort of led to the birth of Wake Up and Smell the Rosé, and now the Recovery Community, which is my membership. And yeah, that's kind of how it came to be. So it worked out in the end where I kind of found my passion through maybe social media played a huge role in that, which is awesome.
Hey, do you know what your blind spots are? As in, do you know what it is, what the thing is that is holding you back from getting your period back? Look, it could be an absolute plethora, cornucopia of things, but in our practice, the first place we tend to go is what behaviors and habits do you have around food that you may be still doing? And these are called blind spots because we just don't necessarily always know that they're an unhelpful habit or that it's something that we're doing, whether it be a subconscious or conscious need to control our food or our body, or whether it be something that you've just done for so long that it feels normal and like a preference even. We have created a checklist. It's a 3-page checklist that goes through food types, behaviors around food, and mindsets around food. And what you do is you go through the lists and you check off and you see which ones are you doing, whether it be daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and how are they potentially affecting your recovery today. So it's a really simple checklist. It's just 3 pages. You go through it. There's a very simple scoring system to help you figure out how much this may be impacting your recovery. And it's just an insightful thing for you to do to help you reflect, and then you can journal about it or you can learn more about it and just start really working at any of the boxes that you checked and understanding that they're playing a role in your recovery. So to get the checklist, all you have to do is go to thehasociety.com/blindspot, and we'll send it straight through to you. You can print it off and you can check on it every now and then. I always recommend a reflection point every like 4 to 6 weeks. How are you going? Are you still checking that behavior off, or have you, you know, systematically kicked it to the curb? So check it out. It's thehasociety.com/blindspot, and it will be waiting for you there.
Yeah, it did. I'm actually a little bit curious too. When you were like, I started posting meals, and I was still kind of in my quote unquote healthy phase, meaning you probably feel like you're more healed now than you were back then, mm-hmm. but you did start anyway. Like mm-hmm. you were, you know, still open to sharing, because we never, at the time, we don't know where we're at in the, like, we're like, for all you know, you were there, you had made mm-hmm. it to the end,
exactly.
but you just kept going. And I think that's a cool point. Two things come up for me there. One is that, like, you know, you don't have to be completely healed to start impacting and helping other people. Like, it's okay to share your story and not feeling like you need to be a certain level of healed to like come on and share it. Cause I'll get that pushback sometimes if I invite someone onto the show and they'll be like, oh, maybe give me like 6 more months. But it's like, no, I see the transformation that's already happened, and I acknowledge there's more to go. But that's the case for all of us. So otherwise, like, you'll never be ready. So there's that piece. But it's also interesting. Like, do you still post photos of food?
Yeah, a lot of my reels, and yeah, I'll post pictures of my meals. I would say they look a bit different. I mean, back then I was posting mostly oatmeal, which I feel like is like a classic staple in the eating disorder recovery
bowl
space.
Bowl foods,
oatmeal specifically. but there's like beauty in that, because that was the first kind of like carbohydrate I felt safe enough to eat after dieting for so long and believing that carbs were bad and like really doing so much damage to my body not eating carbs. So I value the oatmeal. I don't care if anyone says that that's like an eaty thing. And I still love oatmeal. I do try to vary, very like show a variation of foods these days for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, nothing wrong with oatmeal, right? It's more like when we're eating like awful, like dry oatmeal mixed with protein powder and like PB Fit or something. And you're just
exactly.
But back then, but it tastes good to you at the time because you're you're still, and so that's like another thing too. I think people underestimate how long it truly takes to really come to a neutral place with food, from both like how you think of it and see it, but also like your eating habits and behaviors and thoughts really do change with time. I actually never saw an ED therapist. I saw a therapist that sometimes would talk about these types of things. But it's not until being like many, many years down the track that I can look back and go like, whoa, that was not even me. Like thinking about food and when's my next meal? Oh no, it's only 10:30. And like, what can I have? What am I allowed to have? And all of these types of thoughts that you think are you, like your personality. Like, I'm just a food person.
Yes.
So I would love to see, like, know, like, what are your opinions or even just what you kind of see in practice on like timelines to like true. And look, when you never get rid of an ED, let's just be real. You're learning to navigate it versus have it navigate you. But to really get to a place where you're like at the top of the mountain, like, wow, I don't care what I eat today. What do you see in terms of a timeline?
I see so much variation because there are so many varying degrees of ED as well. And I don't often talk about this because I never want people to feel invalidated, because that is also a major trap that the eating disorder can put you in, is feeling like that, yours isn't bad enough, like, or
The
it's
unicorn
fine.
syndrome.
Yeah. So I do try not to talk about it, but there is a lot of variation. Like, even when I talk about my own experiences, sometimes I'm like, oh, that's like fluff compared to what some people really struggle with. Like, when there's OCD mixed into it and there's ARFID and like food intolerances and things like that. Like, everyone has their own journey and very specific things that they need to work through and like might need very specialized treatment with. However, oh, I don't, it's so different. Like,
Yeah.
I've just seen some people who I sort of met at first and thought, whoa, this person needs like a lot more intensive care than I can give them. And then their turnaround rate was
I've
like
had that happen too.
magnificent. Yeah. And I'm just like, whoa, like that's amazing. And not to say that they're just like fully healed, that kind of thing. They, still had to do work around body image and like emotions and things like that. But and then some people are really stuck for a while. And then some people like just show such a transformation in such few, like such a short amount of time. And I'm like, wait, was that, did I even have anything to do with that? I don't think so. But yeah, it's hard to say. But I will say that I think I try not to scare people away by just telling them about the length of time that it can take, because it's not just healing your relationship. It's not just getting over an eating disorder. I feel like healing really requires such a fundamental shift in the way that you view food and what's healthy and fatness and your self-worth and your identity. So there's so many things like that kind of coincide and come together that contribute to this feeling of freedom in the end. And you don't really know what that feels like until you get there. And even when you get there, you're still a human that is going to go through personal growth in other areas too. So I think it's just maybe about viewing it as an ongoing process, just like self-growth is. Our whole life we're growing and adapting to change and transitioning from stage to stage.
I love that because, I even don't enjoy the word heal all that much. It's kind of what I am imagining or hearing you say is it's not really about like going from unhealed to healed. It's a lot more complex and three-dimensional. It's really just going from here to wherever's next and whatever. Like it doesn't, it's not good or bad. It's like unhealed is bad, healed is good. Like you're going from bad to good. Like that's not really what's happening. You're going from one state to another. And we just happen to feel like this is a really, really great journey that takes you further, like closer to growth and change and evolution. And the thing with EDs is they really keep you stuck. Like they really just stop you from experiencing that complex journey of life. Like, and I see that all the time, right? Where, oh, I really want to have a baby. I really want to just leave this behind me. I really want to have a better relationship with food and be able to go out with my friends and blah, blah. But then their actions driven by the ED are literally just telling them to stop in the name of safety, right? Like, stay safe. We, you know, it's not good for you to venture past this border. But like, it's so difficult for someone in that position to see that and make that, like, whatever those first steps are for them. And so that makes me think of what you were saying. Like, some people suddenly just make those big strides and make lots of progress, and some people have to make teeny tiny ones before they can make their big strides. But what if anything is kind of like a strategy or a thought or just even some words of encouragement for someone who resonates with that feeling of like, I'm so afraid to even dip my toes in the water of this journey? I might be putting you on the spot, but I feel like it's your bread and butter.
Yeah, that's okay. I think then I would encourage them to challenge themselves outside of the eating disorder, because I think that a lot of what that contributes to our fear of the eating disorder is coming from our fear of other areas. So for example, you know, something that was, I'll just use myself as an example. I had to face my other personal fears and work on some of that growth outside of the eating disorder in order to be able to take those steps with eating and body image.
Yeah.
Like, I had to push myself out of my comfort zone. And even though I struggled with social anxiety and like probably very low self-worth, I had to challenge myself to like do things I'd never done before, like say yes to new experiences. Go to, like, this might not be for everyone, but I remember signing up to, like, I was very lonely at that point. And when I'm talking about, like, I embraced recovery, I'm talking about like a time in my life when I was in that healthy phase and actually didn't even really know I was like struggling so much with food in my body. But, and it was very lonely and I was very isolated. And that's something that a lot of people in recovery feel. So I had to find a way to connect with other people or feel connected to other things that were meaningful to give me that boost, that kind of internal sense of, oh, I can do scary things. Like, I can be afraid and do something and come out on the other side okay. And it's that sort of internal feeling that helped, I think, fuel my recovery too. Because then at that point, I was like, okay, well, yeah, it's hard not knowing how my body's going to change, or it's hard going through these changes, but I've dealt with other scary things before. And I feel connected to other things that give me a sense of worth and purpose. So I think I can get through this.
Yeah, it's like getting some momentum and getting some success elsewhere. And then kind of riding off that momentum, because it's so right that like these steps are to start these steps from a dead stop, like really difficult, but getting some momentum in other areas and so many more. Or so many of those challenges, like, they do bleed out into other areas, right? Like, it's not really about the food for people. Some people, it's about, you know, their body image. Well, like, what does it look like to go buy different clothes? Or like, what does it, you know, whatever those strategies are for them that can eventually lead to that. Do you think that the people who actually surprise you and make some strides have either knowingly or unknowingly been making changes in other areas, like they have a little bit of that momentum going, perhaps? Or no, it's just some people are just built different.
I think a lot of it has to do with the kind of support you have too. I think that's instrumental. So, you know, a lot of people when they struggle is when they really don't feel like they have a lot of support from people around them. Because a lot of recovery happens outside of your therapy sessions, outside of your dietitian sessions, if you have them. It's happening like in real life all the time. So if you feel like you're lacking that backbone of social support or like true friendships or connections or feeling, yeah, like loved and supported, then I think that can be something that keeps people stuck in recovery. So it's always good to really rely on your resources that way, and even be open and reach out for support. Like, I know a lot of people in recovery are very self-reliant and don't feel comfortable opening up and sharing their emotions and reaching out for support. And they don't realize that that's what can be keeping them stuck in the eating disorder. And sometimes it's not their fault either. Like, sometimes the people in their life are not supportive or are deeply entrenched in diet culture. So that's not helping their recovery.
Yeah. Okay. I love these perspectives are, they're helping me think about things a little bit more from some other angles. So I love that. In terms of like that support system, which is so important, and it's funny how long people will avoid it, and then they sit their friends and family down and tell them, this is what I'm doing and this is how you can help me. And then it's like, boom, like strides, oftentimes. And so we don't give the people around us enough credit sometimes too. But it's like, you know, you have a community and we have a community for those who, you know, feel like the ones in their immediate circle are not ready yet, you know, for them. So love it. On that note, and I'll make this like my last kind of question, like to pick your brain on, but eating and recovering in the face of the opinions of others, right? We're all doing it, whether some of it be like, even if we have the full support of everyone in our life, we still feel like there's judgment, or just like fearing the opinions of them. Like, what if they think I let myself go or something like that? So any like thoughts, strategies, tips from you on people who are pretty much everyone who's kind of like worried or concerned about what those around them are thinking?
I think other people are the mirrors to ourselves. So I think when we're really preoccupied with other people's judgment, we're really struggling with our own self-judgment. So it's really about, you know, like, I feel like people always cringe at the word self-compassion, but self-compassion means understanding yourself, like looking at yourself and saying, oh, it makes sense that you're gaining weight because you're recovering from a restrictive eating disorder and you're learning to embrace all these foods that you used to restrict yourself from, or your body's going through hormonal changes. Like, of course you're experiencing this. And then lending kindness, like, you know, it's okay that these changes are happening to your body. It's normal for your body to change. And knowing that you're not alone, that you're not the only one who's gone through recovery or, you know, who has seen their body changing, as most humans see their body changing. It's kind of what our bodies do. So it's really just kind of getting on your own level and being compassionate towards yourself. Because when you can take away that judgment from yourself, it doesn't, of course, it's always going to hurt if someone says, makes a verbalizes a negative judgment towards us. Like, of course, that hurts. And you feel that pain and that sadness. And you respond to that person and say, you know, that hurt. Please don't ever say anything like that to me again. Or maybe it's bad enough that you have to reevaluate your relationship with them. But like, that's a normal kind of pain and hurt that we all face from time to time, because we're going to be judged or have conflict with people no matter what. But if we are like so afraid of judgment that sometimes isn't even rational, like it's not even happening, it's sort of something we're reading their minds or we're projecting, then it's really a lot about our own judgment. And so we have to really look at ourselves and like get really, really clear on our purpose and why we're in recovery, and that it's okay that these things are happening and changing. And that's hard for people to do, because Most people who struggle with eating also struggle with perfectionism and have a lot of critical thoughts about themselves. So yeah, I would say anytime there's like a strong fear of judgment, it's kind of like a point in the direction of giving yourself some grace, like learning how to overcome perfectionism and be more compassionate and accepting of yourself and the changes that are happening. I don't know, others' judgments or the fear of judgment, it doesn't feel as threatening when you feel really safe with what's happening with yourself.
When you are confident in what you're doing, it's far easier to. So it is almost like there's a slight issue with confidence in what you're doing. And when you're dieting hard, you didn't care when people were like, oh, you're so annoying with your diet. You were like, no, I'm going to die on this hill. That this is the best way. So it's such interesting psychology, right? It's so much more complicated than we think. Well, great. This has been a really great, just like get to know you, kind of hear some of your, you know, philosophies and beliefs. And I really hope that listeners will go and follow you and check out, you know, everything that you're saying and doing, and maybe even join your community if they have an ED. And I think you're just an invaluable resource for people. So I really appreciate you coming on the show. Could you tell everyone where they can find you?
Sure. So you can follow me on socials at Wake Up and Smell the Rosé. And my website is wakeupandsmelltherosé.com. And yeah, that's it. Thank you so much.
Go there, guys. Hey. Yeah, it was such a pleasure. And it was so good to meet you. And thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there, it's me, Danny, and I want to tell you about Temp Drop as a fertility awareness method tracking option. So many of you guys know that we actually recommend the fertility awareness method both as you're going through recovery and 100% after you have gotten some cycles back and you're starting to move forward for the rest of your reproductive years. So Temp Drop itself is a wearable fertility monitor. And we love it. It's a wearable device, so you put it around your arm and you can use that instead of taking your temperature manually with a thermometer each morning. So I'm personally a big fan of the manual tracking. All of us at the HA Society are. And that's the method that we use, you know, just using a good old thermometer. We use that with our clients because it's the best way to use it as a diagnostic tool, as a practitioner. And it's also the best way to ensure if you're trying to avoid pregnancy that you don't get pregnant. However, manual temping for many reasons is just not always an option. When you're in the middle of recovery, again, we do recommend manual temping, but once you're cycling, the temp drop is actually a really great hack. So it gives you basically everything you need to effortlessly track your fertility status, like where you are in your monthly cycle. So you wear the temp drop sensor while you're sleeping for accurate basal body temperature readings without the stress of early morning wake-ups. So I personally love this because with a toddler, my wake-up times are all over the place and the occasional sleep disruptions make using an oral thermometer a lot more difficult. So Temp Drop's accompanying charting app enables you to track an array of symptoms alongside your basal body temperature. This includes tracking your cervical mucus if you've been using OPKs, and then it also gives you sleep insights too. So you can combine these fertility signs all in one place, and that will help you identify your fertile window, confirm ovulation, plan for your period, and if you're trying to get pregnant, you know, identify whether or not you are pregnant. So whether you're trying to conceive or avoiding pregnancy, or you want to chart for health reasons, like HA recovery, making sure your cycle's not slipping back in the HA direction, Temp Drop makes fertility awareness accessible to all women, even if you don't have regular cycles or sleeping patterns. So track your ovulation in real time with the Temp Drop, and we are lucky enough to have a 15% off code. So if you go to their website, they're usually having a sale, but you can stack this code on top of the existing code. So just go to tempdrop.thehasociety.com and use the code AFHA Society. I think too, if you just go to tempdrop.com and use AFHA Society at the checkout, that will work too. So happy temping and good luck.
This episode is brought to you by Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules. Did you know that in terms of nutrient density, beef liver actually blows vegetables and fruits out of the water? If you're a client of mine, you have already been instructed to eat beef liver either fresh or in capsule form. I recommend it for anyone and everyone who is, of course, dealing with amenorrhea and fertility challenges out there, but I may even recommend it for just everyone in general. Get your husbands on it, get your partners on it. If you have a history of HA and add on top of that maybe a history of the pill, maybe you've been pregnant before, you know, through treatments or other, like you've just, your body's been through anything, you know, you're absolutely 100% dealing with a nutrient deficiency of some kind. And while it's true that testing is going to be the best way to understand those exact deficiencies, eating nutrient-dense, real food is going to be one of the most important next steps that you take with or without testing. So I've been using and recommending Grassland Nutrition Beef Liver Capsules for years now, and the capsule form makes it so easy to get your liver in every day, and I appreciate the transparency of this product in particular above others. So in case you're wondering, it's completely natural. This is freeze-dried beef liver in capsules. It's organic, it's made from Australian beef, and my favorite of their products is the liver with kelp because of the iodine from the kelp, which is important for overall thyroid function, which is often low in women with underperforming hormones. So rather than eat seaweed snacks every day, I get to take this beef liver with the kelp for my iodine. So if you're recovering or working on a fertility journey right now, do not skimp the nutrient rich source of beef liver. Get 10% off your order with the HA Society and support your favorite podcast along the way. They ship to most countries, so you should be covered. Just go to grasslandnutrition.net and use HA Society, just HA Society, at the checkout for the 10% off. That's grasslandnutrition.net with the code HA Society.
Thank you so much for listening today, guys. Please subscribe to the podcast, and if you could head to iTunes specifically and leave a rating or review, that would help so much because it makes it easier for other people with HA who are Googling around to find the podcast really easily. So if you do that, you're doing a service to all of the women.